Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Mark Hamrick, bank rate senior economic analyst, joins us. The Fed raised interest rates again by another 75 basis points, 0.75%. What does that mean? Mark Hamrick's here to help explain it. Mark, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Newell. Dare I say happy Friday?
I don't know. You tell me. Should we be happy financially or not?
Well, we'll talk about that.
So you were spot on. You thought it was going to be 75 basis points. It was 75 basis points. Where are we now, and what does it mean?
We don't know. Very often we come on here and we have some degree of confidence about the future, but the springs, which are sort of breaking in the financial markets right now, indicate that there's a high level of uncertainty. I use the expression after the Jackson Hole speech, that was a very remarkable speech by Chairman Powell, which he first started using the concept of the pain that we'll all have to collectively suffer as a result of rising interest rates, as a bit of a brushback pitch, to use the baseball analogy, the financial markets, which had basically said, we do not believe that the Fed will be raising interest rates at a high enough level to really be consistent with their past rhetoric. And if anything, now it's been probably a series of brushback pitches that the markets have thrown at batter Powell. And the question is, which one steps out of the batter's box? Because something has to be reconciled here. The markets are basically saying these projections of higher interest rates into next year may not be acceptable or sustainable. But yet Powell and friends are basically saying in unanimous fashion, which was the way that their statement was issued, to say we've now gotten interest rates into the lowest possible realm of restrictive, meaning no longer neutral, and we actually need to get them a lot higher to get the economy where we think it needs to be to no longer produce high and sustained inflation.
Are there still those that question their commitment to this path?
Just listen to market commentary among those who are bulls, for example, even though we're in a bear market again with the stock market, to say that we don't believe them. But the problem is the Fed has a credibility problem it created on its own, where it projected that inflation previously was temporary or transitory and that interest rates this year would remain close to record low levels. And we know that they've broken out of the bounds that have held them in place for many years now, with a projection that they'll go higher still early next year. And I do think it's a legitimate question whether they can stick to those guns. And even Mr. Powell himself at the news conference said, you know, the only part of their projections that they issue, which go out now to 2025, are the earliest part of those projections, meaning things will likely continue to change. And, you know, whether the markets are Let me back away from what I just said and just throw another thought, would-be thought in there, and then we can go to your next question or whatever. But there is a saying that high prices are a cure for high prices. And look what's happened to crude oil and gasoline, which is obviously key for the entire country, but also key for your region, where we now have crude, I believe, below $80 a barrel. Gasoline prices may be headed back below their year-ago levels now, and obviously drivers welcome that. But as my colleague Greg McBride says, we don't wish for a recession to get low mortgage interest rates or low interest rates of any kind. We don't wish for a recession to get us low gasoline prices either.
Well, you know, you and I have talked about this. When we looking at job numbers, they seem to be running against the current here. But it seems to me in a lot of the articles that I've been reading, everyone is somewhat articulating now that they're starting to see that change. Your thoughts?
Not in the data. And what could be happening on the ground may be in a transition where we start to see a more aggressive pace of job cuts or job openings basically taken off the board. But, you know, let's just run down briefly the list of the latest data. Weekly jobless claims, 213,000 the latest week, matching the levels last seen in May. We would, in the past, talked about 400,000 is a good level to get below. Well, we're at half that level right now. And the number of claims that are continuing to be paid, also relatively low at 1.4 million. Nation's unemployment rate, 3.7%, two ticks above the historic low of 3.5%. Job openings, 11.2 million. Number of officially unemployed, 6 million. So we're still at a level where there's nearly two jobs open for every presumed candidate. So the job market might be the next economic shoe to drop, but we're just not seeing it happen yet. And that doesn't mean that it won't happen, because if we learn one lesson during this pandemic, it's that things do change.
If it does change, where would we see it first? Would we see it first in housing? I mean, I know that you guys spend a lot of time evaluating that. Talk us through that.
Sure. So, people may have a sense out there and are quite knowledgeable about the fact that I think that the job market was red hot during the pandemic for all kinds of reasons, not the least of which we needed space to get away from our family members, perhaps to have four Zoom meetings in a house. And also, you sit in a chair looking at a wall long enough and it begins to need a coat of paint, right? So,
right.
between that and the renovations and the desire for more space or to get out of apartments or multifamily units, that caused an undue demand for housing. And, of course, we had record low mortgage rates. So low cost of financing, the desire to get to new space, all that kind of came crashing together. So low mortgage rates are no longer the thing. We've got mortgage rates at the highest level since 2008. We've gone from mortgage rates in the low 3% range earlier this year, seemingly now bound for 7%, having moved above 6% here recently. And just to give you an idea about housing, after seven straight months of declines in sales of existing homes or previously owned homes, essentially, we're getting premiums added to housing now in cost that's about 33% above where it was just earlier this year. So, that's an inflation rate we can talk about, because between the rise in home prices and the cost of financing a home, that's the difference between buying a home now and buying a home earlier this year. So even the National Association of Realtors, very credible economist Lawrence Yoon, who's been around for years, has called this now a housing recession. And so with mortgage refinancing basically dead in the water, the mortgages that you're getting now for applications are largely about purchases, and there will be sort of a baseline level of purchases that continue to exist. But I think it's fair to say that what's happening in housing now is a recession of its own. Obviously, you've got a bear market in stocks. All kinds of other risk assets have crashed, cryptocurrency. I think we warned people about that before, that we didn't wish losses upon anybody, but that was a gold rush that was doomed to go badly. So the question is, to your point, does this migrate on through the rest of the economy? And the jury's out. Most economists, I think, are sort of at a 50-50 stage of predicting a recession between now and the end of next year. There will be a recession at some point, but clearly the odds have risen in the recent past with respect to one happening sooner rather than later.
Mark, there were a number of folks that were talking about the Fed possibly raising the rate 100 basis points. What was your, and I'm sure you heard the same thing, what was your reaction to that?
They don't know how the Fed operates, meaning that if anything, the Fed tries not to have negative surprises for people, and some would welcome the 100 basis points in the sense of getting it over already in terms of getting to that so-called terminal rate. Here's a fancy cocktail party description to use, and that is the terminal rate for the benchmark rate for federal funds is where it ultimately peaks, where it ends up, and then at that point, then it begins to trickle down. So we're now in the just above 3%, and the Fed itself said next year they expect to get to 4.6. So a lot of people would just like say, get it over already, no more sort of paddles to the chest here. But, you know, the Fed has been very, I want to say, sort of wedded to tradition with respect to communications. And even when we approached, I think, the July meeting, where there was a question about whether it would be 50 basis points, essentially, the good Lord seemed to move his hand, and with a miracle occurring, it showed up in the Wall Street Journal on a Friday before the Wednesday meeting. I'm being facetious, of course, that, oh, the Fed is now going to discuss 75 basis points, and that's indeed what they did. So if they have to, right, you know, pick up the phone and call the Wall Street Journal, let people know what's going to happen, that's what they do.
You earlier mentioned energy, and not of the politics of this, but I just would love to hear your perspective as to what this means. So during the House Financial Services Committee, Rashida Tlaib asked the bank CEOs of J.P. Morgan, Chase, U.S. Bancorp, PNC Financial, Citigroup, Bank of America, Truist Financial, and Wells Fargo, the biggest, right, the seven largest banks, and asked them about committing and and a specific question. Said, does your bank have a policy against funding new oil and gas products? Please answer yes or no. I think without exception, they all answered no in varying different ways. What would it mean to the economy if she actually got her way and they all answered yes, we're not doing that?
Well, first of all, it would be disastrous for all kinds of reasons, not the least of which is essentially you would have had the national government privatizing the banking industry. That's the equivalent of an economic system that's different from the one that we have. There has been a very aggressive movement, I think, and some might fear not aggressive enough with respect to climate change. But there's been a very aggressive move toward considering social and environmental aspects of business practices and trying to prioritize those over profit making. But I think the industry itself is very much about that transition. But the problem is, as you know, and as most people who pay any attention to it know, that we don't have enough energy supply in the sustainable sources yet to allow that to supply as much as, quote unquote, we would like. And so until we get to that point, we still are in bed with fossil fuels. And until the time comes that we have enough sustainable supplies of energy, that's the condition we're going to be in. So, you know, having lived and worked here in the Washington, D.C. area for the greater part of my life, which hasn't led to the end of my life just yet, but it sometimes puts me in a precarious position through frustration. We know that many of these hearings are solely for the purpose of generation of sound bites. I mean, that is not a secret. And so there's a bit of a preaching to the choir there. It's like, oh, I told them. And that, you know, both parties do that all the time. And then the question is, you know, we told those big bank execs, you know, and we just want our supporters back home to know that. And I watched some of those hearings, not all of them, but, you know, I'm willing to bet my mother-in-law's money once again that some Republicans in the hearing made, you know, their own party appeals as well. And so ultimately the bank executives, or let's shift it over to the energy sector executives, they need to make the decisions that are best for their enterprises, for their stakeholders, and also their shareholders. And I think many of them understand that we're in a position where we have to transition to cleaner sources of energy because the health of the planet is clearly at stake. But that's not something where you can flip a switch, to use the energy analogy. It's more of a dimmer, and it's going to take some time.
Well, I love Jamie Dimon's response. He said, absolutely not, and that would be the road to hell for America. And I made the observation earlier in the show. I'm sitting here, I'm looking at all the items on my desk, and there's not a singular item on my desk that is not made from some petrochemical base or substance. And I just often wonder how we cherry pick out, you know, how we're going to do this, because they talk about this, you know, and they've demonized this industry to the point where all things are bad. But so how do we have plastics? How do we have our laptop computers, our cups, our printers. It's all made from petroleum-based products.
Well, and this too will change. It's going to take time. In the meantime, you know, you're not going to be able to have everything you own in your life made from bamboo. and then the people will start protesting against the death of the bamboo forest. So, I think the private sector, as well as the best minds on the planet, are all working on these problems. And those minds stretch from the United States of America to China and all the political systems in between, because I think that's where you get rich, and that's the irony, look at Elon Musk. He was ahead of everybody on this stuff. And Tesla's ahead of everybody on the automobile solution. They may not be in a totally sustainable position. Who knows, as Ford, Volkswagen, GM, move into that space. But, there is money to be made. I think the incentives are there. And if you were to announce on Monday at a news conference that you'd come up with the cure for climate change, you'd supplant Elon Musk on the world's wealthiest list. So I think the incentives are there, and the financial system will work in the way that it always does to help produce solutions there. May not be as fast as we'd like or need, but I think those transitions are well underway.
Real quick, U.S. dollar versus, what we're seeing overseas, the yen in China, the pound, the euro.
Strength is one way to look at it.
Strength, but I mean the uncertainty around the dollar right now.
Well, this is one of the unintended consequences of having an aggressive Federal Reserve and essentially the strongest economy on the planet, as well as sustainable to the degree that we do have energy supplies in our country versus what's going on in Europe. And we even had Japan attempting to support its currency, which is unusual for a single national government or central bank to try to boost their currency. And that just shows you, and obviously yen being weak and Japan having a weak outlook. This is part of the sort of unusual circumstance we find ourselves in. Quickly, it's a bad situation for U.S.-based multinational corporations to have their products priced at an exorbitant level because they're dollar-based, and it's good for U.S. tourists, but that's sort of just a whistle in the wind in terms of the macroeconomic considerations, and this is going to probably persist for a while.
So tumultuous times there, too, then.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's just one of the threads here that is in a very complicated situation.
Yeah. As always, truly enjoy speaking with you, Mark. I always learn a whole lot of different things. Thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great weekend. And I think right after this interview, you get to go and have a cocktail, if I remember.
Well, if we make it there, it'll be many hours, but I do appreciate it. Believe me, I've got Bourbon Street on my mind, even though I'm in the nation's capital.
Mark Hamrick, BankRate Senior Economic Analyst. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.